All right. Hi, everyone, and happy Sunday. I'm glad that you're back okay, Don, and you know you're back at your desk and everything is normal, but of course we miss you here. So we're here for, hey, George and Marie and Sharon and Shauna and AT Radio. I think that's everyone. We're here for for reading books with Bernadette Roberts. So right now I seem to be sticking with What is the Self, although my intention was to use three books. I just haven't got past this one. So we'll just continue with this one until I don't anymore. And I'm on page 17. And we're in a section called The Ego. And we're actually starting in the middle of the paragraph. So I don't want to go back to the beginning of the paragraph. It's a long paragraph. I'm going to just start in the middle of the paragraph, but a little higher. And then I'll tell you when we get to the new stuff. So I'm going to start about one third through the paragraph. The ego is first and foremost the feeling self. It is not, primarily at least, the knowing self. Merely to know something exists, an object, a virtue, something good or bad, does not mean that we want it for ourselves. The ego springs alive only when we want something for ourselves and are determined to get it, possess it. This affirms that the ego is the experience of self-will, a will turned solely on itself that seeks its own fulfillment and benefit. When frustrated, this egoic power or energy has given rise to all the evils in the world. And now, I kept stopping in the middle of that sentence last week. So now we'll continue, and this is going to be new material. So when frustrated, this egoic power or energy has given rise to all the evils in the world. Yet the same ego, in pursuit of goodness, can give rise to great good in the world. Thus, the ego is a particular self-energy or power that can go either way. Negatively, toward what is not good for self, or positively, towards what is good for self. I'm going to pause for a moment, but it's interesting because most teachers do not speak of the ego as being capable of both good and evil. They seem to speak about it as if it's only capable of evil. But what's really interesting is how she defines good. What she has already said is she's described it as what is good for self. But she goes into more detail, so let's read a little further. If we believe that the divine is our highest good, then the ego, self-energy, or self-will goes in pursuit of the divine. And this pursuit is the ego's true, proper, developmental direction. So what she is saying is that the ego is in the pursuit of good when it's in the pursuit of awakening. And I've had people ask me more than once, you know, well, what part of me seeks awakening? Because, you know, the awakened self is already awake. It doesn't seek awakening. So what part of me seeks awakening? And it is the ego. It is the positive use of self-will. You know, there's an interesting line in the Course, at least I remember it this way. I haven't read it for years and memory is faulty, so maybe I made this up. But what I remember from the Course is that there's a line that says something like, the Holy Spirit can use everything that the ego made, right? And so, for example, it's actually the ego that made desire or wanting. But that desire or wanting turned in the direction of awakening is now a positive use of self-will. Do you see? And so it is the ego. It is that same self-will. It is that same wanting that seeks awakening. But since that is in our own best interest, that is what she defines as good. Now, I think sometimes when people think of good in the world, they think of things like feeding the hungry, political activism, recycling, vegetarianism, et cetera, et cetera. And whether those things are good or bad really depends on your underlying attitude. You know, like you can be a pretty, in fact, Marianne Williamson's first book, A Return to Love, it's the only book I read. It was the book that pointed me in the direction of the course. But Marianne Williamson's first book, A Return to Love, the way I remember that is that she was shocked when she began to really look from the course perspective at how attacking she was in her activism. How at war she was, if I remember correctly, in her activism for peace, for example. And she began to see that. And we can all be very attacking or at war in our activism for the environment, for vegetarianism, political attitudes, you know, you just name it. So even feeding the hungry. You know, we could be very hating, you know, hating and attacking in our minds those who have the money to do something but aren't, or those who could make laws that would help feed the hungry but don't. You know what I mean? So one thing that I love about the Tao Te Ching is that the Tao Te Ching explains that if we are empty, there's a self-correcting energy that can move through the empty master that may indeed correct some of the problems in the world. But the point is the master is empty. The master then is not the activist, right? The master is happy with everything as it is, fully satisfied, sees everything as consciousness. Everything is happening in exactly the way it should be. And then that same master might be out there feeding the hungry, for example. It's coming from emptiness. A Course in Miracles, one of my favorite lines from A Course in Miracles, is that a miracle worker's sole responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. Which a lot of people get confused about that. At least some people get confused about that when they read the course. You know, they think that they are to learn to work miracles. But actually, you are to focus on awakening. And the miracles happen naturally as an effect. You know, you aren't to seek out the miracles. In fact, Jesus says in the Miracles Principles, the beginning of the course, that miracles should never be under conscious control. And in fact, he describes miracles under conscious control as miracles that can be severely misguided. And that might be, for example, that you think cancer shouldn't exist in a particular person. And so you go about wanting to heal the cancer, but what you don't understand is you're coming from a judging mind. And actually the judging mind is very detrimental to you and to the universe as a whole. So this is why Jesus says that miracles that are under conscious control can be severely misguided. So it's really interesting when we read Bernadette Roberts, and she talks about how the ego can be used for good. But then she goes on to define the ego being used for good as seeking awakening, seeking truth. It's really the same as that course line that the miracle worker's sole responsibility is to seek the atonement for himself. Really, that's the ego for good, is seeking awakening. So we'll just read these last couple of lines again. Thus, the ego is a particular, oh wait, let me start higher. When frustrated, this egoic power or energy has given rise to all the evils in the world. Yet the same ego in pursuit of goodness can give rise to great good in the world, right? This is just like what the Tao teaches, or what the Course teaches. You become the miracle worker by seeking your own atonement, by seeking your own awakening, right? So the ego in pursuit of goodness can give rise to great good in the world. Thus, the ego is a particular self-energy or power that can go either way, negatively toward what is not good for self, positively toward what is good for self. If we believe that the divine is our highest good, then the ego, self-energy or self-will, goes in pursuit of the divine. And this pursuit is the ego's true, proper, developmental direction. And I think one word that's really interesting in that sentence is developmental. Like, as humans, we are developing properly if we are seeking awakening. It's more like our maturation or our growth is stunted if we're still interested in the world or still interested in the personal self-will. But we begin to mature properly when we begin to seek awakening, which really means that a seeking awakening is quite natural. Because, you know, isn't maturing quite natural, right? 3-year-olds become 10-year-olds, become 20-year-olds, right? Become 40-year-olds. You know, maturing is quite natural. And so awakening is actually quite natural. It's just our maturation from the human state of mind. She says, developmentally, the ego is the original center of consciousness. What we call egoic consciousness is the totality of self or consciousness centered around its own central energy or self-will. Now, when she says the ego is the original center of consciousness, I think what's really important there is the word original. When humans came into being, you know, through the evolutionary process, the ego came into being. You know, the mind bended upon itself, as she says, which the prior level of evolution did not have that. The mind bent upon itself and being able to see ourselves and be interested in ourselves, we became self-centered and self-concerned. And you can kind of see that even in, at least when we look at history, even in the original persons, because original people got into tribes and they warred against each other, right? From the very beginning, humans were interested in me and mine, my family, my tribe, and even all other humans were considered a threat. So the ego is the original center of the human consciousness. What we call egoic consciousness is the totality of self or consciousness centered around its own central energy or self-will. If consciousness were represented as a circular piece of paper, this ego energy would be its center. So it's the driving force of humans. Initially, this center is the feeling self experienced as I want, and maybe even I want survival, right? I mean, isn't that a basic human desire? And it would have been very basic with those original people who organized into tribes, who then fought other tribes, right? I want survival. But isn't I want survival still a want? And isn't it still centered on me? You know, a funny thing happened yesterday. Jasmine and I ran to the hardware store to pick up some stuff. And just as we were pulling into the hardware store, a hailstorm started. And so I looked next door at the gas station, and they don't have a a car wash there anymore, but they used to. And so the open stall was still there. And so I just went over and pulled into the car wash. And as soon as I pulled into the car wash, I saw some man in a truck pulling behind me. And really, there's only room for one car in the car wash. But what I did was I pulled forward so half of my vehicle was sticking out in the hail. And that way he was able to get half of his vehicle in. And Jasmine's like, Mom, stop, stop. And I'm going, I'm just trying to help him get in. She goes, yeah, but you got to think about your car. And I thought, now, isn't that funny? What I was thinking about was let's share this space equally. Half of my car will be saved from the hail and half of your car will be saved from the hail. You know, but that's just not the way most humans think, right? Most humans would think, I got here first. I'm saving my car from the hail. To heck with your car, right? And of course, this was someone I didn't know or anything, right? So most humans would think that way. And this is what she's saying, that this central energy or self-will is the center of our consciousness as humans. Me, mine, I. And you can see that in humans. You can see that in yourself, right? I mean, there's the saying, right? Think of numero uno, right? Right? Numero uno, number one out of 7.5 billion people. Think of yourself. You're number one, right? So if consciousness were represented as a circular piece of paper, this ego energy would be its center. Initially, this center is the feeling self experienced as I want or I must have. I have this highlighted and underlined. There can be no underestimating the power and determination of the ego. I mean, you know, Hitler is a brilliant example, right? Hitler was identified as a part of the Aryan race. And so the Aryan race then became mine, right? I am a part of the Aryan race. The Aryan race is mine. And he saw the Aryan race as superior and then set about literally killing the Jewish race, which he saw as financially threatening the Aryan race, right? I mean, listen to this sentence. There is no underestimating the power and determination of the ego, of that self-will, that center of my consciousness, me and mine, number one, numero uno. There can be no underestimating the power and determination of the ego. Now, this is interesting. This is different than the other teachings that we listen to. She says, it is no illusion or mistake. Right? That's really interesting. Now, some people feel that it's a mistake. And in fact, I would have to say that when I was a student of A Course in Miracles and I read about the tiny mad idea and how we forgot to laugh, I mean, somehow I interpreted tiny mad idea as tiny bad idea. I don't think I'm alone, right? It doesn't say tiny bad idea. It says tiny mad idea. But I saw it as tiny bad idea. And so then I began to feel that being human, having this human experience, was a mistake that I was guilty for. Have you guys ever feel that? It wasn't until NTI Romans came that I came to see it wasn't a mistake. NTI Romans just called it a curiosity and talked about how we were free to explore our curiosity, right? And that's when I began to say, oh, it's not bad, it's okay. And then Inner-Ramana goes even further. Inner-Ramana says the purpose of this experience was joy, but what went wrong was just that we began to think it was our reality. And when we began to think it was our reality, then fear got involved. But you know, certainly saying that this human experience was intended for joy is much different than saying it was a mistake, right? So as I went further, that idea of mistake became undone. But what's also interesting here is she says it is no illusion. And of course, most teachers teach that it is an illusion. And without Bernadette Roberts here to ask her exactly why she says that, I'll just have to go with what feels right to me. One error that a lot of spiritual students also make when they hear the world is not real, the world is an illusion, is they start to think then they don't need to care for the body. They start to think then, for example, I heard a story, I don't know whatever happened of it, but I heard a story about some guy who decided to start driving with his eyes closed because if the world was not real, spirit should be able to guide him perfectly. Now, I don't know if he ever actually did that or if that was just an idea, but you know, these crazy ideas enter into our mind when we think it is an illusion or a dream. And, you know, and I had those same crazy ideas, and I finally went and looked up the word illusion to see what illusion meant, because I thought of an illusion as something that was just totally unreal, if you know what I mean. And instead, when I looked up the word illusion, what it meant was something that appears to be something that it isn't, which means there's a reality here. But instead of seeing the reality or realizing the reality, we're seeing or realizing something else. Yeah, see, that's, I see Don going, oh, see, that's a completely different thing. So my guess is when she says it is no illusion, what she means is you can't treat this human experience, as having no reality at all. Because if you cross the street without looking both ways and you get hit by a truck, if you live through it, it's going to hurt. You know, so there's a reality here. And in fact, there's a message that came to me a long time ago, and maybe we'll even go look at that message. That message is called The Ego Is Not the Devil. I think that's on the Awakening Together website. If it is, maybe I'll share my screen, and we won't have time to finish it, but maybe we'll look at some key paragraphs in it to really get clarity on why she might say this isn't an illusion. Now, it is an illusion in that it's something different than it appears to be, and of course, that's what she wakes up to, right, the reality that is here. But there could be a very good reason why she's saying it's not an illusion, so that we don't get into thinking that we can cross the street without looking both ways. Let's see. Regina Don, here it is, sure enough. So let me go ahead and share my screen. It is on the website. So just in case you want to go and read all of this later, it's on our website under To Read, and then inspirational articles. And then you just have to scroll down until you find it. It says, the ego is a mistake that you believe in. The power of belief is undeniable. What you believe is real for you. Since you believe in separateness and attack, the world seems threatening to you. That is what you believe. That is what you experience. And that is what you fear. The experience of a threatening world seems real to you, and I don't ask you to deny that seeming reality. I don't ask you to step in front of a moving car and trust that it will not hit you, because it may. It would be dependent on the alertness and reaction of the driver behind the wheel. In this way, the world is real. What I ask you to understand is that the reality comes from the belief. The belief is the cause of all that you experience. You make the world you experience. And it goes on from there. It's a pretty good message if you want to go and read it. We don't have time now to read all of it. But notice, this is the very first long message I ever received from Holy Spirit. February 13th, 2005, right? And it's extremely clear. And basically, it's also undoing that same idea that the world has no reality to it. You know, we can just go walk in front of a car. It says there is a seeming reality. And not to deny that seeming reality. In fact, even the Course says, to deny the body is a very unworthy form of denial, even though the Course teaches I am not a body, I am free. So there's a balance there. We need to know there's a reality beyond this world so that we can seek it. But at the same time, we don't want to deny the reality of our experience because it can cause us and others great pain. So I suspect this is why she says it's not an illusion. I suspect that, you know, she knows about this error in the mind where we just get stupid. I remember another person once told me, well, if the world's not real, the body's not real, I should be able to just eat chocolate and get all of my nutritional needs taken care of. You know, I guess the question is, who is it? What is it that wants to eat just chocolate? You know, I mean, so we can get very confused. So she says there can be no underestimating the power and determination of the ego. It is no illusion or mistake. In fact, it is the most verifiable human experience that we know. Some people seem to believe that the ego is a mistake from the beginning. A mistake in that consciousness has failed to recognize the divine as its true center. But this belief is incorrect. We can both know and experience a divine center through the ego, even while the ego or our own self-center remains intact. Directly underlying this ego center, then, is the divine. Now, to me, what she's referring to now is a devotional experience. You know, even while our self-will is completely intact, because that self-will can seek the divine, and that self-will can do things like contemplation and meditation, it can begin to have experiences of the divine. For example, when I'm in contemplation, my heart just, I think this is the best way to describe it. I did this in a retreat once, but it was such an accurate description. It's almost like my heart gets an erection, you know, because it's just so turned on by the contemplation, but it's a very divine feeling, right? I mean, I just feel so centered in truth. I feel more my real self than at any other time. I don't feel there's any other place I'd rather be or anything else I'd rather be doing. It is like the crux of the human experience, the best part of the human experience. So what she is saying is the ego can experience the divine, because the divine is right there. If you imagine, well, you know, the Course often describes the world and the ego as a veil. So if you imagine, let's take this tissue, let's even tear a ply off, let's make it a one-ply tissue so it's very, very thin, right? Here's the ego, and there's the divine right there, you know, right there. And so the ego can experience the divine, because it's right there, is what she's saying. In fact, I'm going to save this tissue because I can see that one's really good for a future symbol she's going to have. But right now we have this symbol, except she uses a circle. But she's saying the very center of this human experience is the ego, but the ego can experience the divine. Right? You can see the erection right there. So some people seem to believe that the ego is a mistake from the beginning, a mistake in that consciousness has failed to recognize the divine as its true center. But this belief is incorrect. We can both know and experience a divine center through the ego, even while the ego or our own self-center remains intact. Directly underlying this ego center, then, is the divine. And that's where I'm going to stop for today. Now, I will not be here next Sunday because I'll be on vacation with my mom and Danielle. So 2 Sundays from now, we'll continue this, all right? And the next week, maybe Don can just play a previous Bernadette Roberts audio. All right, releasing the mic.